When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week, I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. Do any of you remember Scrap Heap Challenge presented by Robert Llewellyn? Well, it's back, but the exploding combustion engines have been replaced by electric motors.
Because people always say, oh, what about batteries? They're not safe. You have a tank of fuel strapped to a bodged together machine with a fuel pipe going to to an engine. We know from experience, that's extremely dangerous.
It is now called Zap Heap, and it's just as exciting and crazy with electric power.
When you press a throttle, you've got 100% of that motor's power instantly. And that is really difficult. You need to be able to control that, because if you just switch it on, the wheels will spin at 150 miles an hour, but they'll just burn the tyres out and there'll be smoke. I mean, it'll be dramatic, but it won't be very useful.
I chat to Robert Llewellyn about Zap Heap and electric cars and all kinds of things. So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you. I started my chat with Robert Llewellyn with just going through things he's done, literally a little introduction to his career and his life.
You were Crichton in Red Dwarf, which people that know about Red Dwarf are probably pretty much obsessed.
Red Dwarf. Maybe, yeah. Some of them, not all of them.
Actually, I mentioned it to my son today, who's 15, and he said, yeah, I know Red Dwarf.
Oh, great. Oh, wonderful. Oh, I'm very impressed with that. Oh, yeah. He's obviously a very intelligent lad.
Oh, yes. Chip off the old block. You've been a presenter on all sorts of things. Scrap Heap Challenge. On Wikipedia, it says you're a science and technology nut. Is that a bit true?
Well, I think it's true in the sense that for someone who has minimum academic ability or capability or achievements in his life, it's a bit of a stretch. But, I mean, I'm genuinely interested in engineering, science and technology. I mean, that isn't opposed. That's lifelong fascination.
Yeah. Okay, good. And now you run Fully Charged, which is a YouTube channel, and also the Everything Electric Expos, which I've been to one of those. They're great fun.
Yeah.
And soon there's something else to be added to the kind of the Everything Electric Expo and telly as well. Zap Heap is going to be shown to the world, and I've got lots of questions all about Zap Heap.
Yeah.
But first of all, if I may, I just want to explore, because I read that you used to be essentially a bit of a petrol head, and now you seem to have come full circle, not really a petrol head anymore, and love things electric.
Yeah.
So what brought that about?
I mean, I think it was, so Scrap Heap was a British TV show, but for 4 years we made, for 2 years we made the episodes in California. So the English teams were actually in California making stuff out of junk that was in a scrapyard in Greater Los Angeles. And while I was there, working there, we also made an American version of the show called Junkyard Wars. So exactly the same show, but with American presenters and me occasionally, and American teams. very popular. It was on Discovery in the USA at that time. And while I spent a lot of time in America, particularly in California. And during that time, I met people who were working on what we would now think of as electric vehicles, but then was really crude experimental tests with electric drivetrains and battery packs and weird software that didn't really work. I mean, there weren't cars being made at that stage. They had General Motors had made one electric car. Tesla were in its absolute formation years. They'd made like 50 cars. They, you know, it was very, very, and they weren't well known and no one knew what was going on. But I kept hearing about this stuff when I was in California. Also by chance, because they came to visit the set because they loved it so much. So there are people who work for the Californian Air Resources Board. And in a sense, it was the combination of conversation with them and with the weird engineers that were, totally not interested. We're talking about battery pack design. I mean, come on, guys.
You have to be a chemist to really...
Yeah, it was just like weird stuff. I wasn't that interested. But the California Air Resource Board were the driving force behind all the things we take for granted now, catalytic converters, unleaded petrol, all the kind of ways at reducing the toxic impact of combustion engines really came out of their...
Was that a private outfit or was
No, it's part of the Californian government. So very much supported by an interesting ex-governor of California, the governator, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. So he was very he understood the impact that really high levels of toxic air from ground transport produced. And there were lots of studies around this. We're talking about in the 80s and 90s, that era, going into the noughties.
We're talking about Arnie here pushing this forward.
Yeah, Arnie was the governor of California and had a hydrogen-powered Hummer.
And it was, okay, I didn't realise he was quite so forward-thinking on this stuff.
Oh, he's incredibly, he's very pro, alternatives to combustion engines. I mean, he's very, he's a healthy guy. He's a sort of health... He's big. He made a good living out of being very big and healthy. I think it's fair to say. So a lot of that drive to clean up the air effectively, particularly. I mean, this was at the time very specific to Los Angeles. So if you go back to the 80s, when I first went to Los Angeles, it was the equivalent of say Shanghai or Mumbai now, when there's terrible air pollution. Actually, Shanghai is much better. But, when it actually gets in the news because so many people are dropping dead and you can't see more than 20 feet in front of you because the air pollution's so bad. Well, that was Los Angeles in the 80s. I thought I'd caught some terrible flu-like throat infection on the plane when I flew there. And it was just, people go, no, that's Los Angeles. Man, that's welcome normal. To Los Angeles. That's normal because it was horrific. And it was the geographic makeup of Los Angeles. It's in a giant bowl with big mountains all the way around it. So if the wind's blowing the right direction, I can't remember which way it is. I think it's coming in off the Pacific. It traps all that toxic.
Yeah, and there's a temperature inversion thing as well, potentially.
And all that, the temperature is horrendous. It was truly appalling. So that's why they were bringing all these things. So the concept of the hybrid was brought in by legislation from the Californian Air Resource Board that went through the Californian Parliament and was... So they were really at the forefront of all that stuff then. I didn't work this out until I'd left. I'm not that clever. I'm not an investigative journalist. I was getting told all this stuff and going, oh, that's interesting. Not really making an impact. But as I then kind of learnt more about it later on in the late noughties and up until when I started the Fully Charged show, so I could tell something was shifting. I was in touch with enough people in the automotive industry. I met the people. I've in fact interviewed him again yesterday. Andy Palmer, Dr. Andy Palmer, who was the kind of real driving force behind the Nissan Leaf and later the Renault Zoe, which were the first two kind of mass-produced, made as electric cars rather than a converted existing vehicle. They, the Nissan Leaf was special because it was it never had a petrol engine. They didn't take that out. It was always electric, and it was compromised in many ways. I've still got one, but those people I was starting to hear about the electrification of transport, and it became, and I think I was kind of partly that I was fascinated by why we should do that, and then also by the really quite vitriolic reaction of the traditional automotive press. So all the, not the well-known ones, but all the car reviewers that have magazines like Auto Car and What Car and This Car, That Car, all those hundreds of magazines that were very popular at that time, went absolutely apoplectic. You know, they just were completely dismissive. And of course, Clarkson famously and the Top Gear people said, you know, they're powered by coal. You have to throw the batteries away after 3 years. That was their assessment of electric cars.
Well, I mean, things have moved on a lot since then. And I think a lot of the magazines, the ones that still exist, to kind of take everything
They're all over them now. Yeah. Yeah, they've changed their tune considerably, which is great. And it's really good. But I just thought, well, I think there's a bit of balance needed here. This, and I'm talking 2010, 2011, 2012, when I first started doing stuff with it. And there weren't any. I mean, there was like a Mitsubishi iMiEV, which was a little experimental electric car that I had for a while, and then the Nissan Leaf, and then eventually Tesla, and then eventually a lot of other people. But it was very slow. Those first sort of, say, from 2010 to 2016, it was a real, you know, very little going on. There was very poor charging infrastructure. That was very minimal. You could do it. I drove from London to Edinburgh in a day in a Nissan Leaf. I think we stopped 9 times to charge.
Okay, so Nissan Leaf, I mean, they're regular cars. They're kind of small.
Yeah.
My, when we stood next to each other, that a famous time that you've forgotten about, you're a tall man.
Well, I'm not that tall. I'm 6 foot, so I'm not huge.
I mean, I find little cars like that quite uncomfortable.
All right, Nissan Leaf is like the same size as a Golf, as a VW Golf. So it's not tiny, tiny. It's not a big car. I mean, it's incredibly comfortable. That is one thing I will say for it. It's got a few faults. I mean, what is ironic now? So we stopped. I don't know if it was 8 or 9 times we had to stop. We couldn't have made it. You could now, the latest Nissan Leaf, which is coming out in a couple of months' time, you would stop for 10 minutes just before you got to Edinburgh, just so you had a bit of extra, you know, it would do it. Right. It will do it in one charge easily. I mean, really easily. So that's it's changed.
I think, Robert, what I'll have to do is I'll have to book you for another talk all about electric cars, because that's a whole fabulous topic.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try and rein you back in a little bit.
Yes.
To talk about Zap Heap, which really is kind of son of Scrap Heap. Is that a fair way to describe it?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yes, it's the errant. it's the offspring, the slightly more aware offspring of Scrap Heap. So Scrap Heap was, you know, as we mentioned earlier, was two teams of engineers finding bits and pieces on a scrapyard and building a machine that had to work for, you know, half an hour. Didn't have to last very long because they generally did tend to fall to bits. Yeah, so a constant kind of quiet drumbeat in the back of my life is going to a car factory or an engineering company and then meeting people who said, oh, I only work here because I used to watch Scrap Heap with my dad. And that's really, really shockingly common. It had an enormous impact on young people's decision of what they were going to do with themselves because they loved
it. Well, I think it was, so much. You know, it was a great British institution, really, wasn't it? And it did stuff that was exciting. I mean, jet cars and machines to throw minis and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, it was crazy stuff. So anyway, cut to more recently, I interviewed an incredible guy called Colin Furs, who has a YouTube channel with, I don't know how many millions, 13 or 14 million subscribers. He makes things. So a lot of the machines he's made on his show, he's an engineer, he's a bodger, he's really clever with all that stuff. He actually made some of the machines we made on Scrap Heap 20 years ago, but he made them really well. He didn't try and do them in 10 hours. He did them in sort of 5 weeks, and they were amazing, and they worked incredibly well. I mean,
he saw the thing on the telly and then thought, I'll make that as well.
Yeah, he watched Scrap Heap. I mean, this is where it ages me. He watched Scrap Heap as a child. He's now a father of two and proper grown up. But he was very inspired by it as a kid. He said it was a real focal point. So when I actually interviewed him on stage at one of our events in London a couple of years ago, and we talked about Scrap Heap then, and then we sort of kind of went, oh, we should really try and do it. And I just thought he would be so good as a, I feel I've done my stint, you know, standing near engineers covered in sparks and oil and exploding things. And he's so enthusiastic and excited about it. So okay. Long story short, we've managed to raise the money to shoot two pilots, but we decided to make it call it Zapheap, and to use instead of combustion engines, which is what we always used on the old scrap heap, we'd use electric motors and batteries to see if that worked. And it, you know, who knows? It might. If it doesn't work, then we might try something else. But it, at the moment, seeing what the teams have built and seeing the enormous choice of designs that they have, because the machines that make the motive power, if you like, mm-hmm. is very restricted in a combustion engine. It's a big thing that has to then drive through a drivetrain to wheels. It's quite sure. complicated to join it. You can put an electric motor in the wheel, so that, and then so you don't need anything else, you know. So you need the wires and a way of mounting it onto a body, okay. and you know, so the whole design limitations that you have with batteries and electric is thrown out the window. It's completely
That was going to be my key question, really. Is
right,
is Zapheap as exciting? Can you sort of create things that are as big and bonkers and fun if they're all electric from stuff you find in a scrap
heap? Yeah.
You know, is it as good?
Well, I mean, we don't know yet. Certainly the build, because we've only filmed the build as I'm speaking to you now. So they've made the machines. There's four teams have made four machines. That's two episodes. So they'll go head to head against each other. I think that it's not going to lack the deafening noise of an old V8 engine with no exhaust pipes, which is what we used to have, and the flames and the smoke. The danger of having a tank of fuel. I mean, you know, because people always say, oh, what about batteries? They're not safe. You have a tank of fuel strapped to a bodged together machine with a fuel pipe going to an engine. That's we know from experience, that's extremely dangerous. You know, petrol tends to do burning. I don't know if people have ever noticed. But that aside, I think I mean the proof's going to be in the pudding when we do the tests, which we're doing at our show, as I said. It could be the dullest thing on the planet. I've got a sneaking suspicion it's not going to be. Okay. I think it's going to be quite noisy and very dramatic and quite amusing. And for all we know, you know, the machines will sort of fall to bits or something will drop off.
We'll find out. How did it actually work? Were the teams actually sort of just transported to a scrap heap and they had to rummage through the scrap heap? And I always wondered this about the original. Were things planted in the scrap heap?
Yes. It was called, yes, in the original, we seeded. That's what it was called. It was seeded. But it was seeded by quite a grumpy engineer that we absolutely adored, Hadrian Spooner, who would drive round the scrapyard with a massive, like what people might understand is a big forklift truck. It's called a Merlot. It's a sort of four-wheel drive thing with huge spikes on the front. It can lift things up like cars, trucks. It's very powerful. So he'd lift up the back of a bus if the team needed like a lawnmower engine. So he'd got a lawnmower engine that he knew that worked. It was an old one, but he's made it sure it worked. He'd then throw the lawnmower engine underneath the bus and drop the bus. How they were going to get that? That was one example. But he wouldn't, like, they weren't on a shelf with labels. They were thrown in, you know, they had to really search them. So what we did, and that was, we had to make sure back in the day, we had to make sure that the teams could make what we wanted them to make. They did have the materials there, but we didn't like hand it to them. They had to sort of dig it out. And what, I mean, fascinatingly, I always remember one example because it was really summed it up. It was a huge scrapyard in America, and we wanted the teams to make high-speed vacuum pumps. So for making street cleaners, so sucked up grit. So that kind of level of vacuum. And we knew that they could make them using the hubs of, a car wheel hub, the bearings in that, they could use that and they could build a cage around it and that would form a fan. They'd make a fan and it would suck there. So they went to find all these bits. We made sure all those bits were there. Well, one of the teams came back within a minute with a perfectly usable real vacuum pump, a manufactured one, which we didn't know was there. And we went, no, we want you to make the vacuum pump. So we took it away from the guy. I was so upset because the whole point was we wanted to show how a vacuum pump works. What if we've got one that works fine? You know, yeah, that's okay. Kind of.
So Zapheap is kind of run on a similar basis,
yeah.
Is it?
So a very similar basis. The difference being because of the, you know, not only the dangers, but the complexity of battery packs. We gave both teams exactly the same thing. So they had a battery pack and the motors. So okay. They didn't have to find those. And they didn't have to spend hours building a battery pack, which certainly two of the teams that we had on were perfectly capable of doing that. That's what they do in their normal day job. So they could have done, it would have taken all day, would have been, and it would have been incredibly boring to watch.
Sure.
No, so we made sure they both had batteries that functioned. They both had, and they had the same, you know, they weren't, we didn't, we were very keen to make them have the same. Yeah. So then that was the only restriction. That was all they had. They could do whatever they wanted with the rest of it. So the rest of the show, apart from that bit, was so similar to all the old ones, the noise of grinding and cutting and welding and the right. spark and working late into the night and everyone being exhausted. That was exactly the same.
So we've spoken about that, like there's potentially slightly less danger because there's no fuel to explode, yeah. in the same way. Does the fact that it's all electric, does that add anything as well? But my thought was if the teams are working side by side and everything's electric, did they try and get sneaky and do any electronic jamming of the opposition or anything like that?
Oh, well, they haven't yet. I mean, I suppose that's not impossible, but although I think the systems they're using are pretty low end. You know, they're not using very sophisticated software that is downloading updates. You know, it's basically a box with a big switch on it. This is, you know, it's very, very basic electronics, I think. I mean, all of them were very au fait with that sort of level of electronics that would be way above you or I putting a new 3-pin plug on a bit of wire. But, you know, so that side of it. But I mean, their understanding of traction, of drivetrains, of tyres, of wheels, of suspension, the way that you make a vehicle grip the road, and you know how you transfer the power from the motor to the wheel successfully, that takes real inside knowledge and skill. And I mean, that was and also, I mean, I think it's important to point out that the motors that two of the teams use are incredibly powerful. I mean, there's very few petrol engines that have that sort of power. And the other difference between a combustion engine and an electric motor is a combustion engine, you know, we all recognize it by the sound. You'll hear a combustion engine going vroom, 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 vroom when it's not moving. And then it goes vroom, and then it's got the power to move the vehicle. Electric motor's got 100% of its power from zero revs before it doesn't need to turn at all. So when you press a throttle, you've got 100% of that motor's power instantly. And that is really difficult. You need to be able to control that, because if you just switch it on, the wheels will spin at 150 miles an hour, but they'll just burn the tires out and there'll be smoke. I mean, it'll be dramatic, but it won't be very useful. So
you've been through some of this because the build has happened. I'm assuming you're not going to tell me what the challenges have been.
Don't give the game away. Clues? I mean, certainly one requires weight and power, and the other requires agility and springiness.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
We can see this. People can come and see the final or the kind of
the when test,
these,
yeah.
when these machines are going to be displayed. Yeah. When's that happening?
So that's on the 11th and 12th of October at Farnborough International. So it's the test will be outside. So we have a huge exhibition going on in the building, but outside we're building a sort of raised seating area and in front of a big sort of concrete pad. I think they normally use it to turn around Airbus A380s. It's quite a large scale thing because it's at an airfield. Okay. And so that was some restrictions of what we could. Can we throw cars around? Well, I don't know, aeroplanes get ever so moody if they see cars flying around. So we were a little bit restricted with what we could show. with what we can do. But because we're, you know, it's a live airfield. There's aircraft taking off and landing all the time. But that's
and this
where
is
the
part
test
of an everything electric show.
Yes, so it's we've kind of joined it on to the everything electric show. That the show was there already, but we've kind of redesigned things to facilitate having that. So in the afternoon, the kind of main focus of the show will be on the tests. And I think there are people who are. I'm actually going tomorrow to the big meeting to just to finalise how we lay things out and what people can see. But I think the idea is that the public can see the machines, you know, from the, when they arrive. You know, they'll be on effectively on display because I think the teams will be painting them, and you know, testing them out and things like that earlier on in the day, and then we do the actual test, you know, under very rigorous test conditions in the afternoon.
And that's open to the public as well?
That's open to the whole thing's open to the public, yeah.
Brilliant,
yeah.
Okay. Saturday so if Sunday. People are listening and thinking, this sounds fantastic, I want to go, are there tickets left? What do they do?
There are some tickets. Well, I mean, what's been fascinating is word of mouth has clearly got out. So we've sold more tickets this year at this stage because it's still today is still 2 weeks away till it happens. If you go to fullycharged.show, that's the address, there'll be a link on there to, of how you can get tickets. So and I know that I think it's under whatever it is, under 14s or under 16s are free. So it's you know very much it's very family oriented. We get lots of kids there. I mean, one of the interesting little side things is our YouTube channels are, you know, there's no point arguing about them. The dominant gender is men that watch the show. You know, it's to a large extent. But what's interesting is the live events, it's, you know, almost 50-50. It's really a lot of women there who are interested in having an electric car, in getting solar panels, in having a battery in the house, in having different water heating, not using gas. You know, that is a much more common across the genders, if you like.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, if my household is typical, everything has to be okay by my wife. So
yeah,
bring them along.
Yeah. Well, I did have a wonderful interaction with a woman a few years ago, a show in Harrogate, who I'd said on stage rather foolishly, you know, it does seem to be, you know, mostly men that watch the show, mostly men are interested in these things. And then I was leaving to go to another event, and literally this woman grabbed my jacket and said, "Mr. Llewellyn, I've got a bone to pick with you. We've got solar panels on our house. I put them on there. We've got an electric car. I got it. We've got batteries in our house. I got." He did nothing. She pointed at her husband, who was sort of cowering in
Cringy.
The corner.
Yeah.
So it's definitely not always. I now have modified my approach. It's not definitely not always men.
But. Fantastic. Right. I'm really looking forward to this. I'm going to go and see if there's any tickets left myself. So I've got actually one final question,
yeah,
which is a bit unfair, really. It is related. Just in the last few days, my car, my Toyota, which is not an electric car, right, of many years service, it's done well over 200,000 miles, has started a what looks like a downward trend, and I think it might be terminal, but it might not be. So the question is, should I try and fix my current car or bite the bullet and go and buy an electric one now? What's better for the environment, better for me? I know it's an impossible question.
But it is a very difficult question, and I mean, I think it is financial because there'll come a point, and this is talking from very long, bitter experience, where maintaining an old combustion car just gets more and more expensive. You have to have more and more spare parts. You need more, it will go wrong more often, all those things. So it's a really difficult choice. I think it's very sensible. If you've got a functioning, good petrol car now, diesel I'm less keen on, but a petrol car, and it works, and you don't care about it that much, you're not that interested in cars, then, you know, just don't forget about it. Don't worry about it for a bit. I think what's now becoming more and more obvious is your next car and a lot of your listeners' next cars probably will be electric. But the other advantage you've got with delaying a little bit is this year was the first year where there were really a lot of secondhand, really good secondhand electric cars on the market. Before this year, there were very few. Simply because they hadn't been around very long. So now there are the first wave of particularly leased, like corporate leased electric cars, of which there's now, you know, we're talking hundreds of thousands of them coming onto the market. So you can buy a much cheaper secondhand, because I never bought new cars. You know, everybody goes, oh, electric cars are too expensive. Well, all new cars are expensive. Doesn't matter what they are. And we're now at that point, we're just approaching that point where a petrol car and an electric car cost the same to buy.
Yeah. I will not be buying a new car.
Yeah, no, exactly. Who would? I mean, yeah. But what is also interesting is there's a couple of companies that are now leasing secondhand cars. So you don't even have to buy a secondhand car. You can lease a secondhand car. They put a guarantee on the battery. They, you know, it has all the same warranties that you would have with a new one. Not as long, I'm sure. And I think that is a real interesting step to investigate that. There is a few people who are doing leasing secondhand. The thing that the car companies and the leasing companies know is, out of all the problems with secondhand vehicles, the one thing that they don't worry about, which is why they're giving longer and longer warranties, is the batteries. Because people always say, oh, the batteries, I have to replace, if I buy a secondhand car, I have to replace the battery immediately. What you will be finding, and certainly this is going to become very true in the next few years, you'll replace the car. You'll keep the battery because the battery's fine. The car will fall to bits because it does. You know, we saw a car in Australia last year. I'm not going to mention the make. You'll have heard of it. That had done just over 550,000 miles on the original battery. And I was talking to the guy who drives it. It's a limousine. So it's used all the time, all day. And he said, oh, well, I've replaced the back axle, the front steering, the suspension, the brakes, the seats in the car, the headlining, you know, that goes over on the roof, the wipers, the motor blade, you know, hundreds of little things.
If you darn a sock so many times, is it still the same sock sort of story,
yes,
isn't it?
Yeah. But I mean, that was the thing, was out of all the things he'd had to replace over that, you know, I don't know how many years, 8 or 9 years of driving it that much to do 500,000 miles. You know, everything else had broken, but the battery was fine. And even when he did replace the battery eventually, because it was at 75% of its normal, of its new capacity, which meant that it still did 250 miles. You know, so I just want to always put, you know, the battery argument, have another argument against electric cars, but forget the battery one. That doesn't work anymore.
Excellent. So, look, Robert, thank you so much for chatting.
No problem.
Just give the website for if people want information about Zap Heap. Or everything electric. Just give the website one more time.
Yes, it's fully charged, all one word, all lowercase, .show. Fully charged, .show.
Excellent. Look, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. I think the Zap Heap thing is going to be really exciting, and I'm looking forward to
thank
it.
You.
So many thanks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much to Robert Llewellyn, my guest this week on the Relax Back UK show, talking all about Zap Heap. Thank you to you for listening, and have a healthy week. Until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.